You're now listening to a Hip Hop Digest special interview with King Killer, Kurt G, and E Green.
Welcome to the Hip Hop Digest interview series. It's your man, DJ King Killer.
Don't forget about your boy, Kurt G.
And of course, it's your man's Ezo Grigio. And it's a special night tonight because King Killer usually says the, or did I miss it again, the interview series.
Yeah, he said interview series. I think you might have been smoking a little bit before we got here.
Hey, I don't know if I was smoking. I don't know about that part, but yes, here we are. We have a man who you absolutely know his work. You've seen it everywhere. You may know his story. You may know his hip hop b-boying. We got Justin Bua on here with us tonight. Yo, what's up, man?
What's up, man? How you doing? Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have on legends.
No doubt.
Yes, sir. So, King Killer, you want to tell him what you always have to tell guests?
All right. So, before we start the show, the guest, we require a couple of things from the guest. The first thing was to tell us your personal favorite three MCs, not the historical list, just your personal.
We don't care if you're your next door neighbors. If you're your favorite MCs, they're your favorites.
Well, definitely Melly Mel, because to me, to this day, he's got one of the greatest, most unique voices, most powerful voices, most classic voices, and I just love his tone, his cadence. He's just such an originator, innovator. I love him so much. And then I would have to say DMC, not because I did a documentary on DMC or I painted DMC, because I've also painted Mel. But because when DMC was at his prime, you could hear him from, like, you know, the nosebleed seats. He was so powerful, so strong. And also lyrically, we forget that DMC wrote a lot of the lyrics for not just Run DMC, but for the Beastie Boys and just some classics. And he was so influenced by rock and roll. It comes through in his voice. He's very unique. And he's also like the bridge between the classic MCs, you know, the Kumo D's, the early MCs, and the late, the ones that were to come, like the Jay-Z's. And then I would have to say, you know, and there's so many, obviously, Rakim. I mean, everybody's going to say that too. So it's like, you know, you're choosing the obvious choice, but to me, Rakim is just, he's got the most hard voice, studio-wise. Not necessarily live, but studio-wise. So those would be my top three. And they resonate with me deeply on a spiritual level.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. That's we know we have a veteran in the house when you mention Melly Mel and DMC.
It's so hard to hear, like, oh, you know, like Eminem or Drake. You ever have anyone say Drake? I hope not.
No. Not on this show. They won't. On this show, they will not say that.
Yeah, that's good.
Especially if they listen to us.
Yeah.
All right. And the second question is, sir, what piece of music, it doesn't matter the format or whatever, that you bought with your own money?
Mm.
Yes, sir. With your own money. A lot of people get on here and say they stole their first piece of music. We won't let them get away with that anymore. You have to tell us the first piece you bought with your own money.
You know, I would, with my own money, I would have to say, like, it's probably Rapper's Delight, you know, as much as mainstream as that was. What was that, 79? Sylvia Robinson. I mean, that was before I knew that, like, you know, Kaz had all his lyrics stolen, but it was still the shit. Like, I even heard it the other day with my 5-year-old, and she was just going nuts for it. Like, no matter, even though, you know, they're not like real quality MCs from the hood, you know what I mean? They're like just it's just the vibe of it was so good. It was so well produced. It has such a flavor to it. And so that was the one that I remember that I purchased first with my money.
Okay.
All right.
That I made from breakdancing on the street from, you know, took the money out of the hat and got that record.
All right.
So let's just jump right into that, because one of the first pieces that I saw from you was the DJ one, right? And the three of us are, I'm considering myself a retired DJ, except for what I do here. They still may be doing the work, the yeoman's work. I don't know, but that's how we all got to this point where we are right now. But for you, someone who does art and so much more, how in the world did you realize that you had a talent, or when did you realize you had a talent to do this?
Well, I mean, I've been painting and drawing since I was little. 5 years old, I was doing books and, you know, little comics and characters. And then I went to LaGuardia High School of Music and Performing Arts and went to school with another. I was a freshman when he was a senior, Slick Rick, at Music and Art, High School of Music and Performing Arts on 137th Street and Common Avenue. Shout out to the old Music and Art. But when Slick Rick was in the Kango crew, so you want to take it way back. And I used to see those lunchroom performances. But I was painting at LaGuardia, and then I really got serious afterwards. And I was able to take, you know, my vision of the world that I saw and experienced and manifest it classically in paintings. Because I believe, you know, with anything musically, you guys are DJs and, you know, we talk about MCs, but I think that there's a importance to the classical aspect to the craft, whether you're studying the masters, you know, or reading and writing music. I think that's all really significant. And there was not a lot of, if any of my contemporaries that I grew up with who had approached art from that perspective. You know, you had like Doz, and you had a bunch of graffiti writers in my neighborhood, like Futura. And, I mean, just too many. Revolt and Dondi and Lee and Lady Pink and all of those people. But no one had really understood the value of classical education with the work, because there's a ceiling to anything. And there's not a ceiling if you have more tools. There's no ceiling. It's impossible. That's why Michelangelo was 81. He said, I'm just beginning to learn how to draw, because there's no ceiling. You keep learning because you realize how deep it is. It's like actually so deep. There's a chasm it's a chasm into infinity.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that said, one of the impetus that we have you on this show, at least for me anyway, I thought the writing on the tower in Los Angeles, I said, because it had made the news, and I was like, that's the spirit of hip hop that is lost. Obviously, we don't hear about that in the context of hip hop nowadays, but I thought that was in the spirit of hip hop. The neighbors were outraged about it, and people who lived in that community were outraged about it. But I felt, or at least that hit me, and I'm curious to get your thoughts about that. I thought that was in the spirit of hip hop, in the tradition of, you know, it's not the trains and whatnot, but they really were outlaws as far as doing their art.
Well, you know, the origins of graffiti are just the co-option of public space. I mean, you see, like, who owns public space? You know, like, it's clearly owned by, and we got into this conversation before, but it seems like the people with the money, you know, the people with the real money, the big pharmas, the big insurance, the tech world, those are the people that own public space now. So just because you're, you know, writing on something, you're trying to co-opt something that you feel is yours. And if it's a Banksy, then you're beautifying the aesthetics, right? You're adding value to it. So technically, you know, it's it's a very nuanced thing, but the origins of it are really about collecting public space, going all city, and really making it your own. You're basically changing the cultural geography and the story of the landscape. And what are the most boring places in the world? Those are the cookie cutter suburbs, right? The Tim Burton, you know, Edward Scissorhand, you know, homogenized architecture. Everything is cookie cutter. But in a city, things are not cookie cutter because a lot, you know, has to do with the writing on the wall, so to speak, graffiti. You know, graffiti is a mechanism of not only making something original, but it also can be, you know, a vast amount of just communication. Dude, cave paintings at Lascaux, France are nothing more than, you know, communicating to future generations, communicating from past generations, talking to the gods. There's deep, deep significant meanings to these drawings. And I think that's kind of the real story of what real graffiti is, you know, speaking to your reference, is like, it's really about manifesting something deeply spiritual into the universe. That being said, you know, if you get a whack tag on your shop, you can also make it ugly and bring the whole vibration down. That's possible too. So you have to really distinguish between graffiti, which is a high art, in my opinion, right? Graffiti, the Italian word graffiti, and vandalism. And I think that everybody, like in New York back in the days, you know, when I was, everyone was like, you know, call vandal, like you report your graffiti artist. It was, everything was so, these were actually pioneers of culture. There was definitely vandals, don't get me wrong, there was for sure vandals. But there was a distinguishing aspect to graffiti writers. And now everybody's a street artist, you know? So that's a whole different story. That's a whole different subject.
Well, let me ask, because, you know, we know you're a hip-hop head, yeah, who was very talented in the arts. How did all that blend in? Because I guess you were coming of age as hip-hop was coming of age as well, just living where you lived, right there in the midst of it. How did that hit you? How did you get attached to hip-hop?
The first time I ever saw anything was this kid. I don't even know if you ever heard of this guy, Floating John. He had like 100 floats. And like he was, you know, backslide, moonwalk, side, just so many beautiful floats. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I know I have to do that, right? And I grew up two blocks away from Rocksteady Park. So I was, you know, I bore witness to, like, you know, Crazy Legs, Kent Swift, Buck Four, Kuriaki, Normski, Mr. Freeze, just all of these, you know, Frosty Freeze, all of the greats. And I knew that I had to be a part of that. It was this kind of, is when you see something for the first time and it hits you, like you're getting hit in the head with a brick and you're like, what the fuck is that? That's insane. And I got to be a part of that. That's kind of how I felt. That's what hip hop was. That's the same thing, you know, when I saw, you know, the first MC battle or the first time I went to the Roxy, you know, to see Herc spin and Flash and Red Alert go berserk. It was like it was intoxicating.
I can imagine.
And that's why you had to be a part of it. And then as I got older, I was like, I have to tell that story because I was there and I'm a painter. And what would I be doing? Like, what is Rembrandt without telling his story? What is John Singer Sargent? What is Katie Kovitz? What is, you know, Claude Monet? I mean, everybody's telling their story through their art. The great artists are telling their story. And so I was telling my story in the culture.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And, now this is a follow-up question to that, because you put on for the culture, right? But your work, I kind of like equated to hip hop. Your shit has been bitten and sold commercially that you will never benefit from, so to speak.
That's for sure.
like hip hop being just taken away from what it really was to being this commercially, like, we're just going to take this, do this. How do you feel, like real talk, how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I made a good career out of it, so I'm not going to complain on that level. But I think, I don't necessarily believe that the greatest artists are recognized. Does that make sense? Like, I don't believe that, you know, how many people know who Big L is, for example, right? That's a good example of that. Like, it's just, the greatest artists are the ones who were at the right place at the right time. And I'm not complaining because my DJ has sold 14 million prints. I mean, it's a massively popular print. But the younger kids that are coming up that can't draw and paint as, you know, academically or under, they don't draw or really understand the art of it, nor do they have a story to tell. They're essentially facsimiles. But it doesn't really matter because it's about what gallery you're at or who's buying your work or what celebrity has talked about you. And we know that. And that's kind of the same thing with anything, right? You're not, you're going to be copied. And Aristotle said that imitation is the purest form of flattery. So that should be, that's the good side. The bad side is that there's been a lot of things career-wise where people have just straight stolen my work. And, you know, for example, I can't really control when I came out with my DJ MC B-Boy graffiti writer Elements of Hip Hop statue collection with Sideshow. You know, it was the most knocked off collection they'd ever had. And they've had Batman and Star Wars figures and, you know, everything. Like, the Sideshow's massive, but they haven't had something that was so knocked up. But what can you do about it? Because it's China. You can't do anything about it. You can't, you know, it's a cat chasing a tail. You can't go after them. It's impossible. The laws are, the international laws are different, and it's just an impossible fight to win. So you go after the ones that you can go after, and then you let everything else just sit. And hopefully, you hope, and I don't know if this is true, but you hope that history will tell the truth. But I think the reality is, like anything, like war and the stories that we read in the history books, that history is written by the victory, you know, by the people that win. Yeah. And that's with everything. So will I be in an art history book even? I don't know. Do I deserve to be? For sure. Of course. But will Shepard Fairey and Banksy be there? Absolutely. For sure. They're already cementing their place, but they know everybody. They're connected. The connection. It's all about connection.
I mean, that's life, though. Mm-hmm. As far as that goes, no doubt. You got any, want to chime in anything, Kirk, Killer?
Something back. Your art, I mean, what you do now, obviously, is well chronicled. When's the last time you picked up a aerosol can?
No, I don't do that. Yeah, I don't do that. It's like I've never was great with aerosol. I used to bomb back in like the 80s, the early 80s. You know, good. I had good hand styles. I was good in my black book, but I wasn't great on the wall because I didn't really care. I cared more about characters and painting. I like painting at an easel, old school, like the masters. Like, nice. I just brought a 300-pound crank easel to my studio today that I've had forever from storage. So, I painted a 300-pound crank easel, so you crank it like this, old school, to go up and down, and it's massive. It's massive. I could get a massive painting on there. So I'm not really that guy. I'm not a aerosol guy, and I think aerosol is highly toxic too. it sucks. Like, I remember almost dying going, you know, to the ones in the ghost yards and having this gust of wind come and the aerosol, the Krylon just hit me and I got caught. I swear to God, I was going to die of suffocation because I couldn't breathe for like 30 seconds. Mm. So, I mean, there's so many people that are so good with aerosol, so good. and they've got so many different techniques, and I'm not one of them.
All right.
Just be honest.
Wild Style, the movie.
Yeah.
How does that resonate with you?
I mean, it's great. Like Style Wars, Wild Style. I was in Beach Street. I mean, I was in the Roxy with standing next to Coco. She was kind of pushing me away. but I'm right there the whole battle of Rocksteady and New York, and it's great to see myself there. I wasn't in Wild Style. I wasn't in Style Wars. I'm a big fan of those movies. They're great movies. I mean, Henry Chalfont did Wild Style, right? Or no, he did Style Wars. Who did Wild Style? I forgot. Maybe he did. But yeah, I mean, classic. Super classic. Brings you back, for sure.
Yes, sir. So with all of this, as somebody who loves your work, appreciate you greatly, what do you feel? I mean, I'm sure you'll say you're still building your legacy, but what do you think of your legacy at this point right now? If you were to never do another piece of art, for whatever reason, you chose not to, well, how do you feel about your legacy in hip-hop art?
Well, I mean, I'm the first person that ever did prints of hip-hop images. So I was the first person that got the narratives of hip hop out in fine artwork. Nobody did that before me. And I opened up a $250 million a year business. It's a $250 million a year business that I started, essentially. And I'm not a part of that anymore because I've gone to another place. You know, I painted the DJs, I did my Legends of Hip Hop book. I had the first ever TV show where I hosted, you know, the Street Art Throwdown. I mean, I had the first, you know, one of the first hip hop cartoons on Comedy Central. Like, I mean, I did NBA Street and NFL Street. I designed the whole look and feel of that. I did Slum Village video. I did Quad Cities DJ record cover. I've got a lot of commercial accolades. But my main thing is the posters, you know, the fact that I've sold millions of DJs, millions of MCs, and 1981, my breakdance, my tribute to the nascent moments of b-boying, the graffiti writer circumventing the actual culture by calling him the artist and not even a graffiti writer. I think that I've done a lot for the culture in terms of the fact that I paint the culture. I've always painted the culture. No one did that before me, and if people are doing it after me, I'm sure they are. I was definitely the first, and I was the best, and I still am. I'm just better, but I'm better.
No, don't hurt yourself. You're reaching over there. Don't hurt yourself.
No, I'm being honest. Listen, we have to have honest conversations.
Yes, sir.
I think we're of the age. Trust me. There's a lot of talented people, but in that genre, I mean, there's nobody.
Because nobody's fucking with him. That's what he's saying.
That's what I'm talking about, though.
Nobody. I mean, what do you expect, like, Rock Him and DMC not to have bravado?
Ooh, man, I love it. I love it.
I mean, here's the thing. The absolute narcissistic idea that artists don't have to pay homage to the masters and understand classical figure drawing and classical painting and all of that stuff that nobody wants to do because it's like paying dues and then call themselves an artist is insane to me. They're just not doing it anymore.
And then
on top of that, then we get into like what's going on with AI, and it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming.
That's critical right
there. It's here. Yeah. It's daunting, but it's here. Yeah.
It's been here. We just get to see it.
It's ugly to the point of you can't even, you won't be able to tell somebody, have a conversation with somebody without them imitating your voice. Just like,
or you think you're communicating with somebody and you're not.
Exactly.
Although I do get a lot of robocalls where I'm like, this could be so much better. Like, it's just, I got so many today. I got like 8. I was like, this is so bad. I have not been fooled once.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
You know, it's coming though. You're right. It's dangerously close. It's getting scary. People that do AI and and are essentially prompting on Midjourney or prompting on DALL-E or prompting on the 500 open AI machine learned sources are delusional to think that they're artists. They're insane. You know, like, just lets everybody auto-tune and let every filter do everything for you. You create a song now, you know, you can create a song on ChatGPT and do the whole thing. And that's like, that's just, it's not art.
Nope.
No.
It isn't. It's terrible.
You guys are so old the way you think. That's
what people oh, yeah. People will definitely argue that. We deal with that all the time.
Yeah.
Just speaking on hip hop music, you know.
Yeah.
We call ourselves the dinosaurs.
Yeah, we do.
But you have to have that, because without people like us, then there's no checks and balances. Then everyone just can get away with it, right? Like, so you always bear witness to my Instagram posts, which I've toned down because, you know, some of them have got millions. I got one with 5.1 million. It's like the nastiness of the DMs that I get. I had to stop because everyone was like, every post I do catches fire.
It's crazy.
And I can't keep up with the like adolescent idea that people are getting their feelings hurt. Like, I'm sorry that you're getting your feelings hurt, but this is a lady hitting a piece of butter with a microphone sitting in the middle of a gallery is not art. And the fact that I said that is so outrageous to some people, I've gotten death threats. Wow. And I'm just like, this is like, we've become so weak and sensitive to the point where I can't have my, by the way, this is my opinion. I'm not saying you have to share the opinion. Right. Like, if you don't share my opinion, you're a piece of shit. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, this is my opinion that this lady hitting a piece of like butter with a microphone is not art. Or the guy scraping his face against the giant, you know, pottery bowl of clay is absolutely ridiculous. And I am entitled to my opinion, as you are yours. And you could, by the way, say that's, I think it's art because, and you could, you know, do a ChatGPT diatribe of why you think that's art. And it's, you know, you're an able articulate dialectician and you feel like you're a Rhodes Scholar because you justified it. But the reality is you're sick because you can't handle the reality that you suck. Like, you're a demented human being who your parents told you everything you did was great, even though it was mediocre. Your parents told you that you're just incredibly qualified and no one could tell you you're not an artist, and everybody's an artist. It's like, bro, not everybody is an artist. You have to pay dues. When you were coming up as a MC, you had to battle your way, or a B-boy, you had to battle your way, or as a fighter, you have to fight. Could you imagine anyone saying that they're a fighter and going in with fucking Floyd? That's insane. You just get knocked down. You go, well, I guess he wasn't. But you can't do that with art.
No.
Right.
You can't do that with art. So you're able to get away with this completely childish manifestation of greatness because, oh, I'm just so great. I'm an artist. It's like, no, you're not.
I need to put what you just said on a loop.
The hard truth.
As motivation.
But I love how he takes it from the encyclopedia, from words. You're like, what is he saying to the street to break it all the way down for you? Like, this is what I'm saying. You suck.
Yeah, it's like, because here's the thing. We live in a very precious world where people are virtue signaling nonstop. It's a nonstop virtue signaling. I'm down with them and everyone's an artist and nobody could say that nothing is art. I mean, I get those all the time. Like, that, those are the nice ones I get. Like, how dare you say, I mean, I get a lot of shame on you. Like, shame on you. I'm like, okay, so I should just say, here's another piece of art, check it out, and that's it. Just present it. Like, I not have an opinion on it, unless it's positive. Ooh, I used to love you when you posted your own stuff. No, you didn't. You don't even follow me. Like, it's so great. They're just lying. They're on top of everything else, they're lying. And so they also want to justify the fact that their parents spent $246,000 on their education and they still don't know how to draw. That's a hard pill to swallow. So they have to say, well, that's art. We're all artists. Every child is an artist. That's true. Every child is an artist. Yeah. Every child is an artist. Every child is an artist, but not every adult is an artist.
Man.
Absolutely, well, awesome.
We appreciate you coming on here. You know, I'm always bothering you about stuff and sending you stuff to get your brain flipping.
There's one that someone sent, that many people sent, where it's a new piece that's gone viral, where a guy gets into, he's in a gallery and he's stretching, he's doing his, he's breathing, he's getting ready, he's just fully getting in the mode, and finally he lays down, and he lays down for 4 days. And that's the piece, that's art. Like, what? But it's gone viral, and I'm going to do something on it, and the fact that I'm going to say that that's not art is going to fucking drive people nuts.
You're going to get it. Yeah, you know it.
What was all the stretching for?
I'm going to get it. Down?
Yep. Wow. Well, when you bring your exhibit to Vegas, and when I see you, unless my knee stops me, I'm a battle you with your up rock, because I see you always out there up rocking and whatnot. So.
Yeah, not lately, but yeah. Not lately, but I should get back into it because it's a great exercise.
No doubt. So tell people where they can find you. They do know, but just for the sake of it, tell people where they can find you.
Justin Bua, JustinBua. Instagram, JustinBua.com. That's pretty much it. And just in the ether of your consciousness, when you're thinking, am I good? And I'm saying, probably not. I basically live in their minds. I live in their head. I've got a couch. I'm painting. I'm working and they're not. So they feel sick.
Rent free. Damn it.
Rent free.
All right, man. Well, you take care of yourself and I'll be hollering at you soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.